This is On the Other Hand. A podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Join us as we talk with another leader in Arkansas who works with others in the community, including some who may not share their own views.
Hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, Glenn White, here with my co-host, April Chatham Carpenter. Get ready for today's conversation as we learn how community leaders in Arkansas are helping work towards solutions. April, tell us about our guest today.
Well, Glenn, I'm so excited to have one of our beloved local Braver Angels leaders joining us on our podcast. She also works on lots of initiatives at the national level of Braver Angels as well. And welcome, Rita Chisholm, to our broadcast. So Rita, welcome to On the Other Hand.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very honored to be here with you today. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. We just want to know, kind of, first of all, get a sense of who you are as well as what you're doing with Braver Angels. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Braver Angels.
Well, my husband and I moved here in 81, and, you know, Arkansas has been my home ever since then. I was never a very political person before coming to Braver Angels, but there was an experience that I had that really just called for my attention. I'm someone that really loves a lot of people, but you know, friends, we use that term pretty loosely, but friends who we invite into our lives intimately are very, they hold a real special place in our lives. One of my friends that I had met in the sixth grade, and starting in 2020, actually when Trump came on the scene in 2016, there was a lot of turmoil throughout the nation. And I didn't particularly like Trump, and my friend definitely didn't like Trump. By 2020, I began to see some separating or some pulling away from me in the relationship. And, when you know someone for, 50 years, you know your patterns. So I was very aware that something was going on, but I just wasn't positively sure what it was. So at that point in time, I'm the kind that I know for my almost 65 years of life that conflict doesn't resolve itself, and it just needs to be brought out on top of the table and dealt with, and lovingly, naturally. And so I attempted to try to figure out, ask her what she was feeling. And in the end, it was very difficult for her. She and I are both different personalities, but I prayed a lot about it. And I realized that she was having a difficult time telling me what was going on. So after a lot of prayer, I realized that, and actually one of the few times that I've actually felt God actually talk to me was I woke up one morning. I'd been praying for months and months, and I woke up and he said, "Release her." And I was shocked, because that was not even the first thought. I'd never even considered that a possibility, but I knew from what we had gone through that it was the most loving thing I could do for her. It was devastating to me, but at the same time, I knew that she was burdened by this also. And so with that, I just told her, I said, and she knew I had been praying a lot about it. And I said, "I have my answer, and I release you from our relationship." I said, "I will always love you, and I'll always be here if you need me." And she said the same thing, actually. But it was, I could tell it was a relief on her. So I was still, even though that was a great thing, I was still just so confused. My understanding of love, the way that I was taught about love growing up and what I had experienced, there is nothing that when you love a person, there are very few things that could tear you apart when you're devoted to that. So to think that politics, which that was what it was, I had voted red. I really had a difficult time making a decision, but ultimately my heart led me to vote on the conservative ticket. And that was just, for her, that was too much. And so I just felt like I had really missed something along the way. And I had two different friends, and, you know, I would talk not to many people, but to a few close friends. And it was interesting because one friend told me, I think you need to look into Braver Angels. And I said, oh, and I said, well, I've never heard of them before. And she told me just a little bit. She didn't know a whole lot. And I said, okay, I'm going to do that. Well, about probably 3 weeks later, one of my blue friends said she could tell I was really hurting over the, you know, the divisions that were going on. And she said, Rita, I think you need to look into Braver Angels. And I said, oh my gosh. I said, I had another friend tell me about that. I said, I meant to do that. So that day I came home and I probably sat there for 3 or 4 hours just researching Braver Angels, looking at the founder, and, you know, just reading as much as I could about it. And I will tell you that I felt such a relief on my heart, because I really think that I wasn't aware of anybody doing anything. I wasn't even aware how divided the country was, let alone that there were bridging organizations out there. So Braver Angels was the first one that I was introduced to. And when I fall in love, I do fall hard. So I fell in love with Braver Angels, and, you know, the rest is history, as they say. But I just felt such a relief, because I do have two daughters and grandchildren that, you know, and me having more life behind me than I had have ahead of me, I knew that I will probably be gone before they are. And the thought of leaving them in a world where people did not like one another or were angry with one another was, you know, on the scale that we were seeing, right? It was just heartbreaking to me. And I felt like I needed to do whatever little thing I could do. And I felt like Braver Angels was the way that I could do that.
I love that story, although I'm sure it still probably is painful a little bit to know that the friendship, what happened with that friendship, but so common that other people have also experienced that. I know you identified yourself as red, and just to clarify for our listeners who might not be as familiar, red is more conservative or Republican, and blue is more liberal or progressive. A lot of people find themselves kind of without a political home, and maybe purple or other colors. And I'm curious, you said that you're red, or you tend towards red. What kind of life experiences have influenced you going towards that more conservative leaning?
That's a really good question. Because before I got involved with Braver Angels, I knew nothing about partisan politics at all. As I was growing up, I grew up in a home that it was a humble home. I have a sweet little Italian mama that raised me along with my father, and she always had such a tender heart for people, and was very, very adamant about the way we treated others from the time we were being raised. We were always taught that kindness was essential, and that people, another human being, deserved respect, in the sense of respect that we were taught that we were made by one God, and that he loved us, and that each individual person was given special gifts and talents, and that those gifts and talents were to be used for, you know, for their time on earth to be shared with the world. And that even though we might not like someone, by the mere fact that they had been given life by God, they definitely had a purpose on this earth. And it was not for us to disrespect another, you know, a child of God. And, you know, I couldn't help as a parent thinking about, and, you know, I've been a parent, you know, to my girls are older now, but I can remember how hurtful it was to me if someone was mean to them, or, you know, as a parent, you feel kind of protective. And I just think that I could really understand that. And so I was taught that we should treat everyone with kindness, even if we may not particularly like them. So that was kind of where that started. My faith, I was in my home. I was brought up as a Christian, but interestingly, I always thought of God as one God. I was not real aware that there were other, you know, at that point in time, as I was being raised, cultures that worshiped a different God or whatever. But the one thing that was, once again, that was just common was that we should treat everyone with respect and love people. So I felt like that was part of my job, you know, as in respect toward God. My faith taught me, I was also taught, this was where I was going with that actually, but I was also taught that there wasn't any difference denominationally, because I was always allowed to go to like vacation Bible school with people that were from different denominations. And I can remember coming home one time and I said, Mom, because we're Catholic. We were, you know, with an Italian mom, how could you help but be raised Catholic? But my father was a non-practicing Methodist. And I said, Mom, I said, they didn't kneel and they don't bless themselves. You know, what's up with that? You know? So she said, oh, you know, she said, listen, she goes, we all love the same God. They just show him in a different way. And at my age, you know, at a younger age, that's all I really was interested in. So I really grew up believing that. And so denominationally, you know, when we come down to Christian denominations, I still feel like we have more in common than we have not in common. Christ is our one common denominator there that we all have in common. So, and I actually believe that I was taught that God, because God made us, we all have the spark of God within us. You know, we know we're told that we were made in his image. The spark of God resides in each person. Now, what I've learned through my years is that we have to dig a little bit to find that spark in some people, but it's still there. And if they, you know, if you can break through whatever hurt, because I believe that a lot of what we see today is due to hurt by someone else. I think that if we can break through and they can trust, you know, the love that we're trying to give, then we're going to see the best of them. I think it's buried under a lot of things that need to be taken care of and, you know, talked about. And so for me, that is where my more conservative values come from. I couldn't have said that previously because I really didn't know what conservative versus liberal values were. One of the things that I saw was that as I got more familiar with, and when I say blues, I hate labels. So I never knew who was blue or red in my group of friends. I never asked. It wasn't a standard by which I chose to identify people. So for me, I really didn't know that much. I just felt like voting was a private issue. But what I was finding was that, and it really proved it panned out as the more blues I spoke with, what I was seeing is that their focus was on underprivileged groups or people, you know, groups that had been not treated fairly or justly. And as a red, or my perspective on this is that I can't look at I look at groups and I do have empathy for certain groups, but my way of dealing with that is every individual that I meet, I try to treat them with, you know, once again, it goes back to you're an individual, you know, I need to treat you. What I can do with you is what I'm more focused on. Once we, you know, if we treat each person that we meet with the love and respect that I believe that God wants us to, they're going to take that back out with them, and they'll be a part of a group that will be better because of that. So for me, while I very much appreciate groups and the plight of many groups, and it hurts my heart to think about some of these things, the best way that I know how to make a change there is with each individual that I meet. Yeah, and it's been very, very interesting because I actually thought to myself, I think I might have been a blue when I was young, you know, when I was in my younger years. But as I got older, I began to, there began to be some practical things that I took more stock of. And so that's kind of where I would say my conservative values came from.
All right. Thank you. So Rita, as you know, in the podcast here, what we try to do is have conversations with various community leaders who in some way are trying to reach out across the various divides in our society with the idea that they're working towards some sort of common good. Now, you've done that through your volunteer work with Brave River Angels. I'm sure you've done it in other ways as well. So I know you've had the chance to work with people who differ from you in some way, and I'm interested in what you've learned over those years. What are the key experiences that help you effectively communicate and work with others and bridge differences when those differences might otherwise, you know, pose a barrier to collaboration and communication? What have you learned, and maybe what's an experience that gives us an example of that?
Okay. Well, once again, it's been my life experience, the way that I've always dealt with people. I've always felt like if you take stock in this person individually and you really care, I mean, it's not that they're just some, you know, you really do care about this person. You really want to understand who they are to the best of, you know, your ability and whatever the situation is. But I find that when people feel like they're really, that you really care about them, honestly care about what they're having to say, my experience has always been that if I listened with interest, and if something, you know, if there was something that was sensitive or was uncomfortable, as long as I didn't respond with some ugliness or, you know, defensiveness, then people, they feel safe and they'll continue to talk to you. Now, if you begin to argue your point, which I will tell you, I am not, I'm not totally innocent of that. I'm, you know, my Italian heritage kind of gives me a little passion, but I can honestly say that I've never thought that that person, the person themselves was horrible. I might think that their perspective is not, you know, gosh, I wish I could explain to them, you know, why I feel the way I feel, but it's never about the person. They are a person that has feelings. They've had experiences in their lifetime, just like I have. I've only got one life to live. I cannot know the practical experiences of every human being. You know, when you think about it, we live in all parts of the country, the North, the South, the East, and the West. We've all, even within our own regions, you know, we have different experiences that help to inform why we believe what we believe. And not to mention, I mean, you know, I have always had a big interest in psychology. And another thing that I came to realize was that, you know, some of my personality, my mom's told me stories. And if anybody thinks that I became a talker overnight, I'm here to tell you, I was talking to people from my stroller. So my mom told me I was a big talker even then. So, and I really thought about it a lot. And I thought, you know, there are a lot of things I can't take credit for in terms of my personality, because it is part of who I am. I didn't intend, you know, we're given certain personalities. I don't know how all that works. I do believe that our experiences within our home and, you know, interactions with others around us as we grow up have big impact on how we view the world. But I just always remember that there is no way for me to understand another person's journey because I have not taken that journey. And that's why I should be willing to listen and try to understand, at the very least, you know, give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I prefer to go in trusting people because for me, I've always been very trusting, but I really considered it a lot. And, you know, it's way too much weight to go in mistrusting up front. I'd much rather trust. And then if you disprove my trust, well, that's when I can start to say, well, might need to be a little more careful. But, you know, I really think that if we gave one another the benefit of the doubt, we might be pleasantly surprised to see how well we could get along.
Yeah. Well, one thing that comes through persistently in everything you're telling us about is a very kind regard for other people and trying to be sensitive when they're getting to a difficult topic and you see the emotion rising. I want to ask you something because I understand from hearing from you earlier that you have an interesting idea that relates to psychology. You would like to see more age-appropriate psychology ideas taught in the public schools in elementary level, which is not typically the case. It may be a few things that our professional association has a curriculum for, but typically that's not something that you get to until you get to high school. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about any of your thoughts about how you might see that happening to help kids learn better about themselves and the, as you call it, the whys of human behavior.
Well, I think that, and that's really interesting because as I really thought about it, I realized that I've been curious since I was a pretty young child. I mean, about human behavior because, and this is a funny story, but it's really true. I remember, you know, it was, like I say, it was really, and I will tell you it, this is another story, but my mother, when she came from Italy with my dad, I was actually born in Italy. We came from Italy when I was less than a month old. And my dad was a poor country boy from Mississippi. And he brought her home to less than perfect circumstances. And I realized that my mom's experiences, she didn't speak English when she came here. She learned how to speak English by watching American TV. And it was interesting. And, you know, I feel this is a long time ago, but people were so ignorant. And when I say ignorant, I'm not being derogatory. I mean, what they just did not understand. In their ignorance, they would say things that were unkind about, you know, I mean, people make fun of, I don't know why that is, but for some reason, there are some people that enjoy a good laugh at someone else's expense, which was something I was taught against. And so that is why my mom was so adamant about kindness, because you can hurt a person's feelings by being unkind. And, you know, as children, I thought a lot about that as a mother. I had a daughter that suffered with anxiety, and that was really a trying time, more so because I loved her so much and was hurting, you know, for the hurt she was experiencing. And I realized that everything in our childhood, we are growing into adults. We're trying to grow into adults. And everything that we experience, whether it's negative or positive, has some influence on the adult that we eventually become. And I would think about certain things about, you know, how children just, I don't know. My mom was so good about being adamant about kindness that it was second nature in our home to be kind. You know, we knew to be kind to people. But I found out as you find out, as you get out into the world, even as a young person, you know, even in elementary school, that people aren't necessarily raised the same way you were. So I remember coming home one time and I was really upset that I couldn't understand why other kids could be mean and I had to be nice. And, you know, it was kind of like, wait a minute, Mom, they're mean. Why do I have to be so nice? You know, and of course that's a silly question, but it's a child's question, right? If I have to be nice, why doesn't everybody else have to be nice? And, you know, of course a saying that I told my daughters also, I'm not their mother. You know, their mother does with them what she wants. I'm doing with you what I want. And this is our rule. You know, these are our rules in our home. And I was a sensitive person. You know, I really loved people from a young age. And I could, you know, and I think that I'm not certain that there aren't many people that didn't feel like at one point or another they were somewhat bullied. Now, I know the difference now between true bullying and just somebody being unkind, right? There's a big difference between those two. But what I do know is that as young people, as children, we are growing to figure out who we are. You know, who are we? We look at our peer group and we have to make decisions about, well, do I follow them so I can be popular? Or do I do what my parents said so I won't get in trouble or get my car taken away?
So in what way would that have you getting more introduction of psychology curriculum into the elementary? How would you see that helping?
Because I believe that when children are taught about the psychology of human beings, there are some things that we all share in common. And my mom used to say to me, why would you want to hurt some, you know, why would you, you know how it feels to be hurt. Why would you want to do that to someone else? And that would be my hope, that we could teach children through psychology. And, you know, I'm not a psychologist, Glenn, you know, this would be your area, but I don't know how we would teach children, but I believe that we would do it in such a way that they could begin to have empathy for other people and to understand that we aren't all alike, and that that's okay, because that's what makes the world interesting, is that we bring different gifts. And so in that way, I believe that by knowing themselves, understanding psychology on a level that's age appropriate, begin to understanding themselves, that might help them to understand their friend also.
Yeah, and it makes me think that I know I have seen in years past there are some parts of the psychology discipline in our national organization that has curriculum for schools involving psychology. It makes me interested in getting into that.
Yeah, so I think about you know, when we encounter this lack of empathy towards others, or we encounter that incivility or sometimes even overt hostility, you know, how do you respond when you are in conversations that are taking a negative turn?
You know, that's something that, once again, like I said, I think I've thought about these things, you know, from a fairly young age, because, you know, when you get up into junior high and high school, and I had an experience in junior high that was pretty hurtful. But once again, I believe it was a combination of things, but what I was taught to turn the other cheek, and not because that person had a right to disrespect me or, you know, nothing like that. But what it was is that we needed to learn to forgive people, because we all make mistakes. And, you know, if someone was mean, I wanted to believe that it was maybe, you know, they might be having a bad day, or, you know, that there was something behind that. That I'm sorry, I keep telling these stories, but they're so impactful in what I came to believe. I remember coming home, and this was, once again, you know, young, it must have been second grade. And I was talking about someone and how ugly they had been or whatever. And my parents said, well, you know, what if, you know, have you thought about maybe, what if that little kid, you know, what if that child, right before they left home, what if their mom hollered at them? Or maybe they got a spanking for something that they did. Now, by the time they get to school, they're still upset. You know, they've gotten in trouble. And so they see you. And you're the first thing that they can lash out at with their anger. So that's what they do. They're projecting onto someone else the hurt that they've experienced. So what my parents were trying to tell me was, let's forgive. Okay. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they've just had a bad day. And that's truly that really does translate into adulthood, because I don't think it translates really well, because we're all growing up, right? We've all been through certain things that have challenged us in growing into adulthood. And so if I see an adult that is angry or disgruntled, or I don't always take it personally, I just try to think, well, something for them, this is so important to them that they will be unkind to another person. There's got to be something deeper here, or there's a, this has a big impact in their life. And so for me, that's the first place I try to go is, okay, I don't know what's going on emotionally for them, but I must, if it was me, I would want someone to forgive me up front. And then now, if I continue to be this way with people, that's another story. That doesn't mean I react in any different way, but you know, there are some people that you truly cannot, I'm not going to say that you can't cross the divide with, but that you realize they're not at a place yet to release the anger or whatever. And so for me, that's what I try to remind myself of, is that as human beings, we all do things sometimes that later we go, wow, I shouldn't have, I'm sorry that I said that, or I was just really upset. And so regardless if I know you well or not, that's the first attitude I'm going to try to take with you.
Thanks to our listeners today for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. We hope you enjoyed the first part of today's discussion with Rita. And, be sure to check out the second part of our conversation with her, as well as our other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. And you can find those on the Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braveranges.org/podcast, or on your favorite podcast site.
And when you visit our website, you can help us improve our program by responding to a brief survey. You'll find a link for it on our webpage, or you can also email us for program or speaker ideas or other feedback at otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White,
and April Chatham Carpenter,
have a good evening. Let's all work to bring our community closer together.